Hey there, and welcome back to the PhD cast. It's the regulars this week. We're back from Melbourne, and it's me, Chris Stevenson, Stu, and Nick talking about all the latest comings and goings and doings in Australian media. This week, we're talking blogging versus journalism. In the wake of the debate about what should be paid and not paid, we talk about professional versus amateurs going at content. Also, Nespresso dropped Clooney for real people. What are the advantages of putting real people into your communications? This is the PhD cast from PhD Australia. Hey gang, how's it going?
Good, thank you.
Very cool. So we're back from Melbourne this week. We're back in Sydney. How's everybody doing?
Good.
Feel good. Loving spring already.
It's spring.
It is spring. Spring has sprung.
Very exciting.
And we should say that this is, it's actually Monday.
Yeah, I was about to say, should I pretend it's
Friday? I was thinking that. Do we pretend? We normally record the PhD cast on a Friday, but we had a very, very hectic run up to the end of last week, and we didn't get a PhD cast out. So we are doing it on Monday. So if I'm we probably weren't missed.
Well, I think we were.
I had a few tweets to ask where we were.
Did you really?
No.
So
social media campaign.
So we're a working day late. It's Monday not Friday, and spring has sprung. Spring was yesterday, and a glorious first day of spring it was.
Amazing.
Cool. And happy Father's Day to all the Australian media daddies out there, and non-media ones.
Media and non-media daddies. A very happy Father's Day. Okay, should we get going?
Yeah.
Okay, so last week, Jonathan Moran, writing in The Telegraph, bemoaned the role that bloggers play in media. He said, "I'm not bitter. I just think you need to earn your position in the industry, and anyone can be a blogger." He says, "Bloggers annoy me, particularly those who parade themselves as celebrities, put their hands up for paid endorsements, and demand front row seating at fashion parades." It was picked up on Umbrella, who reported it, and then there was quite a fair discussion about that. So the original post, guys, the original column in The Telegraph, Jonathan Moran, what was your take on what he was saying, and what was your guys' take on the article?
Well, I think he was mainly kind of bemoaning the lack of transparency, ironically, when bloggers get paid or endorse certain brands' activities. And I think that was mainly kind of his gripe, saying there wasn't a level of transparency that exists in other media forms, which is, okay, it's kind of a fair comment, to be honest.
Yeah, totally. I think the comment around the fact that bloggers in this market, compared to other more developed blogging markets, don't always highlight where they've been gifted or where they've been given something courtesy of, is something that needs to change. But he just annoys me the hell out of me. I thought that article was really just not very well structured. It didn't provide a very good argument. I think
it was written by a blogger.
Yeah, I know. It was written by a blogger, but I just think that's kind of just systematic of working of media. It's what magazines have been doing for ages. Okay, yeah, they might have people that have journalists, but what about all of those 10 best beauty finds that are written by beauty editors that have basically been given that product by PR staff, or the beauty awards that you kind of think, does Joe Blog Public know quite how those things come about? Probably not. But as a media practitioner, I'm still as cynical of those things as I am about new blogger media people talking about stuff that they get given free.
I agree. I guess it's happened in DJ endorsement and PR. It's basically been happening for years. I guess that his point of view is around the transparency of it, and I think in the States there's a lot more transparency, and you have to kind of declare when there's been interest, either financially or whatever. So I think he was kind of bemoaning that, which I do once again agree with, and I do get annoyed by bloggers and this whole blogger phenomenon a little bit as well. So opinion and populist culture becomes the mainstay. And for me, there's a really interesting kind of dynamic between blogger and journalism, and that interplay is a really weird dynamic. So journalism is about creatives, about curated, reviewed content, informed opinion, whereas blogger tends to be more populist or more opinion orientated.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
And I think they both have a very clear role, but it's just unpicking those. And I mean, my favourite bloggers, if they become too much bought by advertising or bought by brands, then and people see through that, don't they? So
yeah,
they kind of highlight it, and then you just don't follow them anymore, or you don't buy into their opinion. But I think if a journalist did that, I'd even be more kind of worried about their opinion, or think less of them.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the point is made that that there is an important difference between journalists and bloggers, and the major issue that the Moran was going on about was being paid to endorse products, but then not declaring it. There have been examples. Umbrella pointed this out in their article on the issue. They pointed out that there was the issue with South Australian Tourism, who paid celebrities to write positive posts about Kangaroo Island. Choice at the weekend called for celebrities to inform consumers when they're being paid to promote a product or service. And interestingly, there was the landmark ruling when Snickers paid celebrities in the UK to tweet out of context.
Yeah.
And then they came clean and they said, no, this is for Snickers. You're not who you are when you're hungry,
yeah,
kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the complaints against that were overruled because they'd come clean, because they'd been transparent,
yeah,
about the fact that they were endorsing a brand.
Transparency is, because we're getting to we're getting to a place where these cultural this endorsement is increasingly blurred. So my favourite example of Wrigley's paying like a rapper in the UK in the US to just put the double the taste, the double the pleasure, which is their tagline, into a song. That's paid endorsement that then becomes part of popular culture. Do we think less of it because of that? Should transparency be really focused? Should we be really clear every time we absorb a message that it's been paid for? Or do you think it's not going to matter? Do you think it becomes self-selecting?
My point of view, I think it does become quite self-selecting, and I think it also comes down to the authenticity of the people who were the people in the brands that are working together,
yeah,
or whether that's media properties and brands working together, or indeed celebrities. And the other thing about Moran's article is that I think that there's this kind of like, okay, so what does a celebrity need to do in order to be, you know, given this Wrigley's project? Like,
yeah,
why? What makes a celebrity so brilliant and important? Which I think we'll come on to a conversation a little bit later on in the podcast. But I do think it is quite self-selecting.
Yeah,
based on authenticity.
Yeah, I think to reinforce, I mean, support for that argument, Nick, comes from, of all quarters, Alex Perry.
Yes.
Alex Perry, who suggests that you have got to be selective. He said, the serious fashion editors and bloggers have a place, but with anything, you've got to use your discretion. If you've got 50,000 followers and 3 weeks ago you had 10... there's something dodgy going on there. There's a slew of them that I simply don't know who they are. It's like they've bought a package from the computer shop, set up their own blog, and write what they want to write. Basically, they're ones I respect, that have something to say, and others who are yet to prove themselves. The sense of Alex Perry, of all people, that ultimately this comes down to, is this person credible in terms of what the content or the opinion they're giving you, and therefore do you buy into it or not?
Yeah. Exactly. I think it does go back to, for me, it does feel you should be more self-selective, and we don't have to be necessarily that overt about it, because I think the value equation that consumers are entering with advertising is increasingly changing, and people are probably aware that that bloggers get, I mean, it would be great to do some sort of study or understand and quantify that, but
yeah,
I think if you ask most people who are who actually kind of use bloggers frequently, so I know, Nick, you love blogging and you love reading about bloggers, I just think you know about that value equation. You know that they're not just there for fun, that they've got to make some money somehow.
Just something kicks in the back of your head and you kind of think, you can't possibly afford to be able to be buying all of this new stuff. And also, you get used to seeing the same things getting posted on different blogs, and so all of a sudden it becomes quite transparent, and then it challenges your opinion and your view of that blog, and think, well, you're kind of, you know, or just there's a sea of sameness, and I'm kind of bought into your content initially because you were, I felt like you were giving me something that was really new. So I've thought about this a little bit today, and I kind of think that there's three things that has always historically come from journalism. And I'm mainly talking about like fashion and beauty, because that's kind of the you know, the passion content area that was discussed in that topic. And if you think about it, journalism and kind of like content creators initially have always provided information, inspiration and aspiration. And what bloggers, I think, really allow you to do is open this whole world of conversation as well. And as soon as a blogger has gone from kind of like 50,000 followers up to 10,000 followers, regardless of what that does in terms of being able to adhere maybe some sort of attention from PR companies, you absolutely look at that last fourth element of what's the conversation that's around that. And the thing is that conversation won't be around that because it's not going to be about a community. So therefore, the argument kind of goes, well, it's pointless because, yeah, there's therefore no conversation, there's no engagement, it's devalued anyway. So yeah. Sure, these people can go and buy a computer, they can go and set up a blog, they can kind of do it. But without that element of conversation,
and I guess
then brands don't want to be part of that anyway.
From an advertising agency point of view, like, we would be clever enough to not just chase reach. So it's not just about reach. It's got to be, as you said, about the community, the involvement of that blogger, how they're viewed by that community. I think, yeah, there's a lot of factors that would go into that. And I can't say the same for how PR companies work, but from a media agency, we would be a bit more savvy. Not just throw money at bloggers willy-nilly.
It's a word of the week. But I think the other point that's absolutely right to make is that, in my opinion, the whole blogging phenomenon has added to the media ecosystem more than it's taken away. I think that media is better because we've got hundreds of thousands of people contributing opinions, ideas, the best of which rise to the surface. And it also, you know, contribute to, like you're saying, a conversation on what's emerging in society and culture. And some of those, I think, probably some of the biggest media platforms probably started as a little bit like blog. I might be wrong, but IMD might have started as a blog about movies, which came in. Rotten Tomatoes, I think, certainly did start as a blog about movies. That got big. So Huffington Post was essentially a blog, which grew into. So these things, the best stuff has risen to the top and has scaled.
And it grew by credibility that's driven by engagement and conversation and that community-led feel. And you can't buy that. And I don't think that brands can just go in and give free shit. Oops, that I think might have been my first swear on the podcast. Sorry. You can't just go give free stuff and expect to adhere that engagement.
It's interesting because, I don't know, being devil's advocate, right? I think the bloggers and the kind of the egalitarianness of opinion has evolved popular culture and has evolved media, but has it necessarily done it a good thing is another question. So, like, for me, like, we are evaluating, we are kind of degrading and the value of genuine opinion and learned opinion as well. So I think it's really an interesting point from a traditional journalist to then be up against a blogger, because in my head they shouldn't kind of be in the same kind of plinth, or they're each not even comparable with different products.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because that's the point that was made by Mrs. Woog, who responded on Mumbrella to the original article. And she made the point that bloggers are not journalists. They are very, very different things. And she went on to say bloggers are content creators. We report on things that might be of interest to our readers. We have intimate knowledge of just who that demographic is. She went on to say the reason why Nicole Wan, who is the celebrity fashion blogger that sparked this, is in the front row at fashion shows is because she too knows her audience and can deliver the brand's messages directly to them. And by all accounts, she has a shitload of readers. That's not me swearing, that's me quoting. and then finally she says, interestingly enough, I've also seen journalists carefully following bloggers on platforms of social media. I myself have seen many of my blog posts be worked and published, sometimes with very little changes. So journalism's aren't ignoring bloggers. Mm-hmm. Journalism's are doing quite rightly the job that journalists should do, which is see what's out there, filter it, curate it, fact check it, sense check it, give it context, and then give us an aggregated, considered journalistic view of what's going on. And bloggers are going into journalism.
Yeah, and the whole... You know, the whole experience of being involved in the blogging community is the fact that you don't have that depth and you don't have necessarily that diversity of sources and that curation of opinion. It is, and certainly again looking at the fashion and beauty areas that have been discussed, it is a daily update on what, you know, simple stupid things like what I'm wearing or what I've been doing today. So bloggers will never be... in that space. That's not what their platform, that's not what their readers go there. And I think what, coming back, I think Mr. Boo makes the best observation is knowing what that audience wants, knowing what your audience responds well to. It's in the blogger's interest to continue doing that, because that then grows their community and grows their engagement. And I've just actually completely withdrew from a blog that I've been reading for 4 years, and she's changed her site, and I really don't like the experience. And so now I no longer go there. So the content is still going to be the same, yet my experience of accessing that content, accessing all of the stuff that I've used to, for 4 years, every Monday to Friday, enjoyed reading, and I don't do it anymore.
Mm-hmm. And we should probably all, you know, have full disclosure. We, all three of us, have blogs and write blogs, and we are bloggers. But when you're writing blog posts, how much do you think about... Why are you laughing?
The one post has been very successful.
So when you're writing blog posts, I mean, do you guys think about the community you have in mind? Do you think about what you're writing for, who you're writing for?
I've got a work blog called Icy Provocateur that has, I think, all about 3 posts on there. And absolutely thinking about what my voice and what I want to be contributing into an industry conversation. And then I've got Leshalicious, which is a hobby, something that I enjoy doing. That's something that I've actually not written for about a year because it's very time consuming to do this. But, and again...
It's like a full-time job.
Do you know what? It could be a full-time job.
Well, that's why it is.
Well, clearly, for some of you, it's a very well-paid full-time job.
I know, I'd love it to be $650 for one post.
$650 for one post.
But I think what
when giving
you're,
myself away.
But for me, because I haven't got thousands and thousands of followers, I've literally got about 79 views that all come from America because they're, you know, much more into this whole long world.
Well, probably
but,
journalists stealing
yeah,
ideas.
Exactly.
You'll probably find that your 3 posts have been written about 30 times across various American.
I can guarantee that that's not happened. But I write about the things that actually interest me, and then I think the organic growth of blogs and the organic thing that builds through that community to a degree, and there'll definitely be that tipping point where you kind of then need to think about your readers and how your readers are engaging, because there's definitely that tipping point. But otherwise, yeah, write about things that interest me, and when I get people responding to that, great.
And have you ever been offered money to endorse a product on your blog?
I have twice.
Have you?
Yeah, and I've not done it.
Why not?
Because they were crappy products that I wouldn't use in my day-to-day life, so I wouldn't... I'm not.
Can you say what
they
were?
No.
Okay.
What sector were they in?
Fashion and beauty. One for a fashion brand and one for a beauty brand.
It's very exciting.
Wow. No one has ever asked me to endorse their product and be paid for it. Oddly enough, I've been approached twice for people volunteering to write for my blog and for me to pay them to write for my blog. which probably speaks volumes of the perception of the quality of my blog.
But you've been consistently blogging about mediation, Chris Stevenson's blog. You've been consistently writing your blog. What goes through your mind when you're curating your posts?
So it's a good question. I was thinking about this. The reason why I asked the question is I think, do I have a really specific community or group in mind? And I think that I do and I don't. I think I first and foremost absolutely write for myself. And for me, when I blog, it's about how I capture and form and crystallise my opinions. It's how I make sense of the world. It's how I make sense of media and how it's changing and how different organisations and different strategies and brands are dealing fundamentally with change. And I write about it in order to make sense of it. And I find it very useful as a back catalogue. I often find that I thought I wrote something about that once and then go back to it. and it's a useful reference of things I've thought and captured and order that I've brought to some of the chaos that goes on in my head. But I do think that I implicitly almost write for people who are interested in what's going on in media and have an open mind about how we genuinely mediate between the traditionalists and what was in media and the revolutionaries and what is changing and what is coming. And I think that the certainly from a brand's perspective, and I think from a good strategist or planner's perspective, balancing those two and understanding those two, understanding the best of the heritage and the traditional media and why they've worked and how they've worked, but embracing and testing the best of new is absolutely the best and only way to do what we do.
And would you take money if someone offered you? So say if, I don't know, a media contractor said, we've got a really interesting piece of research that we've commissioned, it's awesome, can you write about it? And here's $600.
If it was on brand for my blog, and if I felt it was something I would normally write about, and it was there, and if I was free to write my own opinion and say whatever I thought about it, I would actually take the money and I would do full disclosure. I would fully disclose it, and I would take the money as long as I was writing what I thought, and as long as it was on strategy for the brand. And to be honest, that's kind of happened anyway. Like, I mean, I've been asked to go and talk somewhere, haven't paid to go there, but I've given an honest opinion and hopefully added value to that debate. But I've been, you know, full disclosure about it was my opinion and all of that.
Yeah. Oh, it's a heated topic.
It is, isn't it? Because we've talked.
I love blogging, though. I love it.
Do you?
Yeah.
I don't like doing it.
You haven't done it much, have you, Stu?
No, because I just think you're right. It is all about for writing for you, and therefore I'm like, I just keep it in my book or I keep it in my head. But I think it's interesting you're talking about kind of being part of a community, because that's the difference. Like, so if you're a blogger, you are writing for almost like a big thought bubble or a cloud about something specific. Because if you're a journalist, you should be about opinion, cutting edge,
being very considered.
Yeah.
Which blogging, I don't think it is always considered. It can
be considered.
Yeah, but you have complete leeway to kind of go. It's usually more frequent and kind of like less depth, so you can kind of be like, oh, that was Tuesday, it's Thursday now, and I'm...
But I guess it also depends completely on what type of category you're working in.
Absolutely,
so
yeah.
Like, I mean, Paris Hilton and fashion makes it easier to work in that space because the lines are more blurred, because you can, it's all about opinion, it's less kind of, I guess it's less, I'm going to say intellectual, sounds really rude, but you know what I mean? Whereas if you've got something, if you're like a war correspondent, it might be better to have someone who's had a lot more experience in that space to get a learned opinion from.
There are probably fewer war bloggers blogging from the front line. Although they would say that, but then look at Twitter and the Arab Spring.
It depends what you want. So if I'm there to learn about that not experience, about the whole ideas and that impartially what's happening in that moment, then I would probably turn to journalism versus blogging, but that might just be my preference. But blogging gives the immediacy, awesome, but doesn't give the, I don't know, the thing that's going to help change or shape my point of view, which is what I look for in journalism.
And also, I think that the right media platforms now will kind of offer that journalism,
yeah,
but then
exactly.
Also offer that community and that conversation perspective around it.
BBC, Sky, still tweet from the front lines.
Yeah.
Cool, well, should we talk about Nespresso?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So Nespresso, end of last week, they dropped George Clooney. I know, right? They dropped George, but he's okay.
Right.
And Australia, he's out, and Australian customers are in, as Nespresso put real customers at the heart of its first global campaign in the region. This is reported in Ad News. At the end of last week, 5 members of the Nespresso Coffee Club will star in the ads instead of our George. The coffee brand is hoping it'll tap into the emotional side of Australians. It's running in print, it's running in outdoor, I think, yes, and online. And Nicole Parker, who's the marketing communications manager for Nespresso Oceania.
It's
a good table.
I love her. She's
good. It's like Bond villain. Said, Nespresso Club members are such a passionate group of coffee drinkers, and the response to the campaign is testament to the way Australians feel about Nespresso. It's a celebrities versus the equivalent of blogging, I suppose, isn't it? Real people.
Yeah.
So what do we make of this move by Nespresso?
I can see why it works for Nespresso, but I do think there's a definite trend for loads of brands going, let's just get rid of our celebrity ambassadors and we'll let's have real people.
Yeah, but let's make
brand.
A campaign out of finding the real people, and then we'll use the real people, and then that's, and I think for
to
me,
talk about a really, because actually they're getting people to talk about their first Nespresso moment, which feels really navel-gazing still. So, like, yay, I really care about Sue from Parramatta and how she first had an espresso. Like, I don't know, being cynical, as you know I am, I'm like, do I really care?
I'm cynical because I just think, you know what, it's still just an ad.
Yeah.
Excuse me?
Well, it is. Where's the... I want to see a campaign idea, but where's the core idea in there? So, yeah, substitute George for a real person. Is that going to increase my likelihood, or is that going to increase the salience that I have for that brand, so that when I'm thirsty I'm going to next think about how I wish I had an espresso machine?
It is a phenomenally good point. I kind of think that this is essentially just substituting one person for another person in an execution, whereas actually if the Nespresso Coffee Club is everything they say it is, there's huge potential to engage that club, amplify it, do something about it. If you look at what Mini have done with their community, if you look at what Heineken are doing at the moment with content and dropped and real people, there are examples of brands involving real people in their communications that go beyond just being in the ad.
And are you implying then that loyalty comes into play then, if there's a club and if they're trying to...
Well, I was implying that if you've got an engaged community, then there are certainly opportunities to have big ideas to amplify what that community do and how they do it, above and beyond just putting people from that community in ads.
And that comes back to having a brand behaviour as well as being, kind of loyalty-driven.
Can I be even more cynical, right?
Yeah.
This is what I think would have happened. Like, they've obviously got George as a global asset, and then they've had some brand tracking that says they just don't feel in this market that they're building a connection with
anything.
People. Yeah, that he means anything. So they've gone, okay, well, obviously that means we'll have, in lots of different markets across Oceania, we'll use the people in that market. And
but they can't use, but they probably can't use celebrities, because that would damage the global deal they have with
exactly.
George.
So they're using, how do we connect with people in Australia? Let's put them in the ads. And I mean, that's interesting, because I've had a couple of meetings where I've seen a lot of global clients revert to that level of
localization.
Yeah, it is. Localization translates to putting local people in the ads.
But in the right context, that can be, it can be the right strategy.
If there's an idea, like to make this point.
If there's an idea, exactly.
And also, I think kind of we've been talking about people's cynicism around will this be paid or not? And I think in the absence of actually having a core idea that kind of sees, either that this community kind of sees this real person, Sue from Parramatta, A, will people just look at that and think it's now a model that's been paid to be put in an ad and she's pretending to be Sue from Parramatta? Or if it is a real person, indeed, how much has she been paid to be in Nespresso? So,
I completely
convincing?
Agree.
Is it influential?
Well, perhaps she should write a blog about it.
Maybe I bloody would have. Oh! So sorry, podcasters. The honest reason is that I'm quite tired, and when I'm tired, I'm not very open.
Sam, it's a big, scary Monday. PhD cast. And that's about all we've got time for. Enjoyed that. Good discussion.
Yeah, it was good.
Cool. So, big thank you to you, Stu.
Thank you. If anyone send me any money to endorse anything, I'm more than happy to do that. Out there.
But you will fully disclose it.
Fully disclose it on my blog with about 3 people. Actually.
But it's probably 3 very engaged people.
Very engaged. My mum is very
Nicola,
yeah, really enjoyed that. Thanks
for
having me. Thank you.
Brilliant stuff. I'm Chris Stevenson. Have a great week, because it's Monday. Have a good week. Thank you for listening. And we'll be back at the end of this week. Cheers.
Woo! To get more from PhD Australia, you can like us on Facebook, you can follow us on Twitter, or find us on Google+ at PhD Australia.